We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In this hour of the show, we'll be talking a little bit about a proposed project that would expand internet access in Champaign-Urbana. It's called Big Broadband, and it would create a fiber optic network that would make it possible for people at public institutions, things like libraries and schools and hospitals and nursing homes, as well as many individuals, particularly people who live in underserved areas, make it possible for them to have high-speed internet service. We will try to talk a little bit this morning about how this project would work, what it might do for the community, what it's expected to cost, where that money is coming from. And this, of course, will also be an opportunity for people who are listening to ask those very self-same questions. And we have two guests with us here on the program. Bill DeJarnett is the Information Services Manager for the City of Urbana. And Mike Smeltzer, he is a Director of Networking for Sites at the U of I, and is somebody who really has been taking a leadership position in trying to make this happen, make Big Broadband happen. They are have a website, so you can go there and you can find out more about it. But here, questions are welcome. That's why we're doing the show, so people can ask questions. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, the number to call is 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. And you may email your comments to will-talk@illinois.edu. Thank you both very much for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let me ask just start with the most basic level, and we can talk in detail. But if I ask the most basic question, what is Big Broadband? What's your quick answer?
Our implementation of Big Broadband is actually twofold, and the projects are almost of equal size and equal importance. The first project is a series of 7 fiber optic rings that run throughout the community that would connect all anchor institutions in Champaign-Urbana and Savoy to each other and to the internet. This would be every one of the 40 K-12 schools. This would be all the libraries, the police stations, fire stations, public service agencies, a lot of who am I leaving out here? Public computing centers, something like the Independent Media Center in Urbana, Don Moyer's Boys and Girls Club, a women's shelter. I mean, the list is – there's 143 of them. I'm sure I won't name them all. And that's the first part of the project, and that would be fiber into each one of those institutions at 100 megabits per second. They could talk to each other. They could talk to Parkland. They could talk to the university. The connectivity to the outside world is not quite that fast, but nonetheless, it's a much improvement over what most of them have today. The second part of the project is a fiber to the home pilot project in 11 census block groups that were determined to be underserved by a door-to-door survey. And in those areas, our residents will be offered fiber to their home, paid for by the grant, and probably up to about 2,500 homes will have that opportunity. There's roughly 4,600 households in that area.
Mm-hmm. So here, and something that I guess I'm a little bit confused about, you were talking about putting in the fiber optic cable. So in a sense, what you're saying is you're going to lay pipe for information to pass through. Are you also talking about going into the business of being an internet service provider?
Yes. UC2B is the acronym for Urbana-Champaign Big Broadband, is an intergovernmental consortium. Both city councils and the university signed on an agreement to create this entity, and it's kind of like MedCAD, which started that exact same way. And it will be both a wholesale and a retail internet provider. Due to the conditions of the grant and also just due to our preferences anyway, this will be an open network. So if Company X, say Consolidated Communications in Mattoon, wanted to come up here and sell services over this fiber network, they'd be able to do that. So we're actually enabling competitors for our own retail service, the idea being that the more choice consumers have, the better.
I wanted to maybe turn to Bill DeJarnett and have you talk a little bit about, you know, from your perspective, why this would be a valuable thing. And I'm expecting that right now, for example, at City Hall, you have internet service, don't you?
Actually, we have some broadband that we've been placing in over the last 7 years or so. We've got a long stretch that runs from the county courthouse through the city building, through Public Works, and then all the way out to the Brookings Center. So that's been established, and that's been there for a number of years. We'd started a project with the school districts before this grant became available to get connectivity to the university and with them through to the Illinois Century Network to start hooking up the schools. So actually we have a number of schools also hooked up in Urbana currently. So the timing's a little bit was interesting for us is that we had already hooked up or in the process of hooking up, you know, over 20 different facilities with broadband. Mm-hmm. The advantage of this environment is the provision of some consistency throughout the whole community, and that has huge value.
Mm-hmm. That I guess again one of my basic questions was it came out of this assumption that places like schools, library, government buildings, hospitals, all were already connected to the internet, and so the question would be, why do you need to build something that already exists?
Well, that goes to the definition between broadband and big broadband. Broadband is loosely defined, I can't talk, as like DSL, which many people have in their homes, cable modems, maybe a T1 line would qualify for that. And those are all speeds that typically are less than 10 megabits per second, sometimes much slower than that. And, for instance, the Champaign Public Library has some connectivity that's provided through the Illinois Century Network and through the city of Champaign. I think they're up to 8 or 9, maybe 10 megabits per second, and that's nowhere near enough. They have at least 100, I believe, public computers in there, and that's an awful lot of people using that small of a connection. For instance, at Parkland and also at the University of Illinois, typically if you sit down at your computer at your desk, you have 100 megabits per second connection just for your computer, and the building you're in probably has a gigabit per second connection that those people in that building all share. This is just taking it to the next level in terms of more connectivity. The type of connections that are available today to my home, probably to your home, are all based on copper cables, and there's a limit to how much bandwidth you can get through a copper cable. You can only get so much data to go through a copper cable. Fiber optic cables are pretty much infinite in terms of the amount of data you can push through them, and this is taking fiber all the way to the end user, which provides for much greater bandwidths in the future. And this is really a 20 or 30-year project. We're not looking at what the needs are today or tomorrow. We're looking at where we're going to be in 10 years, where we're going to be in 20 years, 30 years even, because the fiber is good for that long.
Yeah. And I'm sure that we'll talk about what it is that we're talking about in terms of cost, but let us just say in terms of how long it would take to build this, to put the cable out there. Is there a projection?
Yes. We had to have very tight schedules in our application. All the fiber has to be in and running by September of 2012. Our goal is pretty much to have it a year prior to that. May not make September, but certainly during the construction season in 2011, we'd like to get everything done.
Okay.
You know, one of the other advantages that, I mean, we have a number of places that they will go out and they will get a T1, which is an expanded connection, but it's quite expensive. You work backwards from that. We also have an expectation to achieve some economies of scale, which will dramatically drop the price for all these entities that have connections now, mm-hmm. but they have them kind of an ad hoc, piecemeal manner. We can put all that together into a pot and get a much better pricing structure.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is one of the advantages for anybody now who actually has access is that not only would it mean a faster service, that it also might save them some money in terms of what it is that they're paying.
Yes.
To have their internet.
This should be faster and cheaper than anything that's available currently. That's not to say that current providers couldn't lower their prices, but this will, if you look at what people are charging today for how much bandwidth, everything we've proposed is both faster and cheaper.
And the other issue that has a real payback from a community-wide perspective is that traffic that stays within the community. In other words, students that are connecting to their high schools, their grade schools, their junior highs, students talking back to the university, all these connections stay within our system and travel at a much higher rate of speed, and we're not paying internet traffic for that. Other traffic, normally, you're paying for that bandwidth to send it all the way out, come all the way back. Well, that traffic stays here. So that's a huge benefit.
If you were a Parkland student and you were in one of the areas that had fiber to the residence or fiber to the home, you could sit at your home computer and it would be just like being in Parkland, in one of the buildings in Parkland. The speeds would be identical to what you would achieve on Parkland's local area network. Same thing for Unit 4 schools. There wouldn't be, or District 116, same difference. A student who attends any of those schools would have access to the school's network at the same speeds that they would as if they were sitting in their classroom. And that's certainly not the case today.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580, Mike Smeltzer. He is the site's Director of Networking here at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Bill G. Jarnett is the Information Services Manager for City of Urbana. We're talking about big broadband. This project is proposed to construct broadband fiber optic network, put the cable out there, and make it possible for people to have high-speed internet connection in their homes, for some people to have that in their homes, and also to have that in public places, as we've discussed, schools, libraries, government buildings, nursing homes, and the libraries, all of these places that really need to talk not only to each other but to the outside world. We're talking about what it is and how it works. And if you have questions, you call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. So what is the total cost projected to be?
The project that was approved by the federal government has a total of $29,386,925.
Okay.
I knew you were going to ask me that.
And the bulk of that is coming from the federal government?
Yes. $22.5 million of that is coming from the federal government. $3.5 million of that is coming from the state. The remainder, which is roughly $3.3 million, is from local sources.
And that includes both cities. It includes the University of Illinois, but it also includes local schools. It includes the Champaign-Urbana MTD, the sanitary district. There's a fairly long list of participants.
There is. And all of those, the money that the federal government is involved in this was part of the stimulus package almost over a year ago. They set aside $7 billion nationwide, and then this was a competitive grant process to get access to some of that money. The state had a similar program as well to help create local matching funds, and we were successful in both of those.
Mm-hmm. And now the clock on this is ticking, we have a period of about a month, or now a little bit less than a month, that these various parties that we're talking about, the cities and all these other groups, the University of Illinois, have to say, yes, we are going to participate and we're willing to put in this X amount of dollars.
Correct.
What now, and I know that in both cities, for example, the councils have expressed interest in this. I'm sure that they also have concerns about the cost. What is your reading of the willingness of all of these entities to be able to come up with the money?
Both city councils unanimously passed resolutions last summer supporting this and earmarking some money for this project. They didn't make a total commitment to that, but they said, all right, we're going to set aside. There was specific dollar amounts in the resolutions each of the city councils passed. They are now – we've been able to give them an exact number. And they are now considering resolutions. I think both city councils have, at least in draft form, resolutions to supply their part of the local matching funds. Mm-hmm. I believe Champaign will take a vote Tuesday the 16th at their regular council meeting. I believe Urbana is headed on a track towards perhaps taking a vote on Monday the 22nd. Mm-hmm. They're going to have some discussion, I believe, this coming Monday, and then they seem to be heading towards a vote on the 22nd.
Yeah. Bill, do you have any – obviously, you're not speaking for the city and can't speak for the council. This is a council decision, obviously. Any sort of thought about how people in Urbana are thinking about this?
Well, it's a classic example of we moved. This is a project that had to move very quickly. Mike did a yeoman's job of putting all this together, and he read it the tea leaves correctly. That said, we want to be in round one, and that placed us ahead of, frankly, a slew of places are going to be applying in round two and positioned us very well to get this. The downside is we envision that we're going to hear around October the status of this. Mm-hmm. So people barely pretty much said, yeah, sounds great. We want to do this. We've got to get these paperwork in place, and we'll deal with the details on the back end. And that was great, and things move forward. And now we're at that detail stage. So it's working through the same process, getting people back on track, getting them caught up again with the little bit of the changes, getting them to re-understand the project. Things have happened in 6 months, so they got to get people, everybody back up to speed again and focused on the issues, working through the pros and the cons. And like I said, devil's in the details, so you know, now's the time to finish, you know, going through all these little issues. If you had a problem, you know, figure that out, get that laid out, get answers to that, and then move forward, because like I said, the clock is ticking. But I think that long span between the first concept of when this thing was going to happen and this 4 or 5 months created kind of a lull, and you know, I wouldn't say it lost traction, but it lost direction because there are other key things that came up. So that's just part of it's just getting everybody back up to speed, getting everybody moving forward, and look at these new timetables and looking at how clear they are and where we have to be and what needs to be done.
I have some callers here I want to get right to. Let me first, though, very quickly do an email question here. Someone writes, are you all saying that this fiber network would be in competition with Comcast and AT&T that are providing internet service to people's homes right now? And if so, is this fiber optic network a not-for-profit entity?
It's to the extent that any government is a not-for-profit, or any government body is a not-for-profit entity, the consortium, I suspect, would be a non-for-profit entity. It will provide some competition for Comcast and AT&T, but it could also provide an infrastructure for Comcast and AT&T. Comcast has a significant investment in their copper. They have some fiber and they have a lot of copper. AT&T is similarly structured. They may come to us in a year and say, okay, you've got this wonderful fiber network. Why don't we just plug into you one place and deliver our services over this wonderful fiber network rather than trying to maintain this old aging copper? And that'd be fine. Now, that's not normally been their business model, but that's certainly something that we're open to and something that statutorily we agreed that we would do. So it could be that 10 years from now, you have fiber coming into your home and you'll have a choice of 10 different telephone providers or 10 different cable TV providers or internet providers, and they all share the same infrastructure and share the cost of maintaining that infrastructure. And it's just people would buy services based on the quality of the services, the customer service, and price. Mm-hmm.
And also, let's not confuse this grant with a very limited rollout to selected areas to a community-wide rollout. That's a completely, you know, so if you talk about being in direct competition with them, some entities in selected areas, but those areas were selected specifically because of the low penetration rates for companies such as Comcast and AT&T, so they were, you know, so they were already not reaching into those areas at a high level. So a community-wide rollout is a whole different animal, and that is something that would come based on the success of this model, and it's not at all underneath that. Now, do the rings support the concept of community-wide rollout? Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the pieces that it would carry if that was a viable, long-term goal.
So just to make sure I understand, say where I live, I'm sure it's not an underserved area. I'm betting many of my neighbors have internet service. At my house, there are two wires that come in. There's the cable. There's the phone. So right now, I could go to either of them to get my internet.
Uh-huh.
Is your idea, your goal, that someday there also would be a fiber optic cable coming off one of the main lines of the big broadband so that also could be an avenue for me to get internet at my house?
Yes. That's not what the city councils are voting on in the coming weeks, but that certainly would be my long-term goal, would be that every home in Champaign-Urbana community would be connected to fiber. We might as well talk about Google because that's kind of the elephant in the room. Yeah. Google has announced a national competition to build fiber to the home to communities roughly the size of Champaign-Urbana. The fact that we have attracted the federal money to start building this already and have kind of organized and gotten our stuff together in terms of figuring out how we'd want to do it and where we'd want to do it probably positions us well to go out and apply for the Google grant. So we will be doing that. As soon as we get through this round of approvals with the City Council, the Google application is due March 26th. And if you go to the UC2B website, which is www.uc2b.net/Google, you can actually go on and nominate Champaign-Urbana to Google as a place that they should invest their money in. And that's one possible vehicle for how we build out the whole city and get to every home. It's probably a long shot, but getting this grant we already have was pretty much a long shot. So we're batting good so far. Maybe we can keep leveraging that.
All right. Well, I got some callers here. Also, if you go to look for this website, it's UC2, and that's the numeral 2.
Yes.
UC2.
Correct.
All right. Let's talk with callers here. We'll start with, I believe, someone in Indiana. Rankin? Yes, Rankin, line number 4. My apologies. Yes, go ahead. Hello.
Hi, gentlemen.
Yes.
I got a question for Mike. With the use of the fiber optic network, will that eliminate the wireless connections? Because I tend to view that as a like electromagnetic pollution that's not necessary.
I think people will still probably put wireless access points in their homes rather than – it depends when your home's being built. I mean, a lot of homes that are being built today, they're putting in wiring for data circuits around the home. Some people have just said, well, wireless is getting pretty good. We'll just put a single access point and cover our home that way. So I think you'll still see access points in homes, which – you know, are polluting, I suppose, within the home. There are service providers in this community that distribute internet wirelessly as well. Trees and topology have sometimes get in the way of that. So I don't know that it'll necessarily make it go away, but it might reduce the need for some of it.
How about with institutions like you're talking about, the U of I, Parkland, and then the city itself? Will this be, for the sake of, you know, terminology, like a hard wire connection to the fiber optics, or will you still, again, interface with the wireless?
Well, this is Bill. The kind of a two-phase piece. There's a hard wire connection to the network, but the cost to put internet all throughout a building, and especially into large open areas, wireless has just been proven consistently to be much cheaper. Now the issue becomes bandwidth. If I'm hooking up to offices and desks that I have, I need a consistent high bandwidth mapping, things of that nature, there's not a question I'm going to hardwire every one of those computers in that environment. If I'm going to provide some access into the council chambers, I'm going to put in wireless because it's less expensive, and I can also do some things from a security side of the network that allows me to make a couple of different looks at how we get out.
That was my next question. So, yeah, thanks for that.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. We'll go on here. Next, we'll talk with someone in Indiana, line number 2. Hello.
Hello. You sort of skirted a general question I wanted to ask you. I guess we'll talk optic fiber because that's where everything is or going to. Sort of treating this like sort of a fabric kind of thing, where starting at the bottom, in sort of sense, treating Champaign-Urbana as a college community versus other similar populated college communities in terms of optic fiber concentration. Then moving on up into the regional area, then to the United States. I would just presume from the startup that Europe's ahead of us all the way on this optic fiber stuff. And I said, well, I really don't know. I wondered if you knew. And because, you know, the competition's the way I'm looking at it now, who's going to win out. And optic fiber's already won that part out. It's just now the battle between, shall we say, the profits and the non-profits and who can scoop up more people. If you have any information on that, I'd like to know something about that, just where Champaign-Urbana fits into the total picture, statewide, regional, and national, perhaps. Thanks.
The university has fiber throughout its buildings, connecting the buildings to each other. We actually have a fiber network that goes to Chicago and Springfield to connect those campuses, again, to our systems here and to the internet. But I know in Indiana, for instance, there was a proposal that was funded that is similar to what we got, but it's from the same program but very different, where a private company was going to build a lot of fiber connecting junior colleges in Indiana, but they're also going to connect private companies as well. And I think they agreed to give four strands of that fiber to the junior college system within Indiana. So that was actually a public-private partnership. And one of the aspects of our proposal here is that you have senior living centers, you have medical facilities, you have schools, you have hospitals, all sharing the cost of putting the fiber in the ground initially and then maintaining that fiber because each needs just a couple of strands. And it's expensive for any one entity to do that, but when you have 10 or 20 entities sharing that cost, it makes a lot of sense to do. So Illinois... There is another round of funding coming up in the same program, and there are some regional projects that are being proposed. None of those were funded in the first round, and I was actually on a call this morning where they were talking about improving some of those applications for the second round, which is due, I think, the 25th. So we're helpful of that, but we're not specifically enabling any things beyond that. The communities that are just outside of Champaign-Urbana are saying, well, gee, once you do Champaign-Urbana, why don't you come do Mahomet, or why don't you come do St. Joe? And that's all possible. We'll have enough fiber in the ground, and we get enough to the edge of the cities that it's only a couple miles to get to Mahomet. It's a few more miles to get to St. Joe. But if those communities wanted to organize and tap into the system, that'd be great because the more customers there are, the more the costs are spread.
Mm. Now, there's already a statewide organization, the Illinois Century Network, that came out of trying to start connecting a number of governmental items, most of which they started with libraries, schools, and then they expanded out and started picking up local governments. And that was that is a state organization that is in direct competition conceptually with any of the number of providers. But they connect in a number of ways. Not everybody connects to fiber to the ICN. A number of schools, because of the distance, connect through T1 lines, which is copper, that they've had to acquire physically from, say, AT&T or another vendor to do that connecting portion. So there's a lot of pieces of this that, depending on where you're at, depending on how close you are, there are still a number of partnerships that are private-public, and then there's some of them are able to get to direct connections. We have a direct connection in Urbana because we happen to have laid fiber that gets us all the way from, say, a Urbana Middle School all the way to the Ovi campus, which then trunks us all the way into the Illinois Century Network.
All right. Well, I hope that gets to the question of the call. Let's continue. Maybe I should very quickly introduce the guests. How about I'll do that, then we'll get right back to the phones. Bill DeJarnette is the last guy you heard. He's the Information Services Manager for City of Urbana. Mike Smeltzer is also here. He's Sites Director of Networking at the U of I. And we're talking about big broadband. This is a project that would be funded substantially by a federal grant with also a significant amount of money from the state of Illinois, but also the city councils of Urbana and Champaign, the University of Illinois, some other local government entities would all be kicking in money, and it would be used to begin to construct a fiber, high-speed fiber optic network to provide high-speed internet access to a lot of people in public places. Again, we're talking about schools and libraries, nursing homes, hospitals and clinics, but also to some individuals to their households who live in areas that are underserved by internet to make it possible for them to have high-speed connection to. The federal money came in, and so now, roughly speaking, there is a month period here for all of the various local players to decide whether or not they're going to participate. And questions are welcome. If you have a basic question about what this is, how it'll work, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. I think next we're going to talk with somebody in Sycamore. That's interesting because they just got one of these grants. I think the caller here is Line 1, Sycamore. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know that. I actually live outside of Sycamore in the country, served out of another town nearby. But it's still interesting because I'm unfortunately outside the range of DSL, probably by a few miles from the central office. And my question to you is, will the installation of this fiber enhance the availability of DSL in other areas because now you can get on the fiber from the copper quicker?
Conceivably, the very first grant in this program that was awarded in Illinois was to DeKalb County, and I believe the governor was up there a couple of weeks ago now to announce that. I don't know exactly what their plans are, but the folks at NIU that helped them secure the grant have, I think, a nice design. It may actually be wireless once you get out in a tremendously rural area, but the closer you can get fiber to wherever you are, whether it be DSL or wireless or something else to get to you, the more bandwidth is going to be available to you. So I would check in with the folks at Northern because DeKalb County, I think, is actually the official recipient.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's go back here to someone in Vermilion County, line number two. Hello. Okay, how about we try line three? This is Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm just wondering about the organization, I guess. Is there a possibility that if one of the entities you mentioned failed to approve the program, that could abort the entire operation? I'm thinking of the two cities.
It would certainly complicate things greatly with 30 days left to put this all together. One of the main contributions each of the cities provides to this is actually the public right-of-way for these cables to be installed. All these cables will be buried underground, and they'll go to manholes and so forth. There won't be anything on telephone poles. If either city and its ultimate wisdom were to elect to not do this, we would certainly try and scramble and do the other city or figure out some other way of getting it done. At this point in time, I'm certainly hopeful that a majority of both city councils are in favor of this. We'll know when they actually take their votes, but I know there are individuals that are perhaps not in favor of it for whatever reason, but I think we have a majority on both city councils that are in favor.
Well, that's certainly good news. I have a feeling Urbana will be enlightened, but I'm worried principally about the mayor of Champaign. He seems to have some strange notions.
He has publicly expressed a lack of confidence in this particular project, and from my perspective, fortunately, he's only one of eight people that will be voting.
Well, that's good news. I wish you success. I think it's the most worthy project.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. And now we'll go back to that Vermilion County caller. This is line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm back.
Yes.
I was surprised you called on me so soon. Anyway, my question is about in the home. Can you describe what, if there is any different kind of equipment a homeowner is going to need instead of what we already have for being hooked up, for example, to a Comcast gear? And if somebody is rewiring their house, should they be installing fiber optic for this system, or should they stick with the standard cabling that is available?
If you were going to be rewiring your house, this would not really look any different than the back end of a DSL connection or the back end of a cable modem connection. There'll be a small box, roughly the same size of your cable modem, that the fiber plugs into, and it has Ethernet ports on the backside. For the project we've proposed here in Champaign-Urbana, we will also be adding what's sometimes referred to as a cable router, a wireless cable router that sits on top of that, that does a couple of technical functions you need it to do, but it also then would provide wireless service. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't want to rewire your house or it was inconvenient for one reason to do that, you could just do it all wirelessly unless you have a really, really big house.
Yeah.
So no, you don't really have to do anything different. This is all very standards-based. There's a small box. One little strand of fiber comes into your home, plugs into that box. You have to plug it into the wall to power it, and then you can either plug your computers and televisions and things directly into that box, or if you have computers all over the house, you'd have to either have the wired connections or a wireless connection. But it's the exact same stuff you're using now.
Well, that was my question, because I wanted to put wiring up to the different rooms, you know, on the second floor, so we would have a hard connection to all the computers up there. And should that piece of wire running from the basement to where the fiber optic comes in, Should that also be fiber optic cable going upstairs?
Copper cabling is just fine for that kind of a distance.
Okay.
You can go up to 100 meters with copper cabling. It's either Category 5E or Category 6 cable. You can buy that yourself and do it yourself, or you can hire somebody to do that. But at those kinds of distances, the copper is just fine.
Okay. And speaking of hiring somebody, journeyman electricians know all about this, or should somebody from the cable companies do that? Or
there are some electrical contractors that have specialized in this kind of work. There are others that are getting more involved in this because it's becoming, you know, more common and more important. There is actually certifications. There is a national organization called BICSI, and don't ask me to...
BICSI?
BICSI, B-I-C-S-I, I believe. And if you have a BICSI-certified installer for low-voltage cabling, they should know exactly what to do.
Okay. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you for the call. I have another email here, and I wanted to do this, and we'll get back to a phone call. Here, the person writes... question, could this turn into a community fiber co-op? I'd like you to flesh out the possibility of getting superior service at a fraction of the price. The person here writes, I have no interest in supporting a network of fiber that in the end will not provide me with a better deal than a large corporation will sell me. This seems reasonable given the technology, as you say, has infinite bandwidth.
Let me start. We discussed this earlier, but one of the issues is bandwidth is becoming more and more of a what we'll just call a loose commodity item. Volume, being able to buy in volume, has decreases the price. We expect to continue to be able to leverage that volume access to get much more competitive prices. No one is going to want to do this, and the councils in particular, nor are the people that have indicated their support, the MTD or anything else, are interested in doing this to raise their price, to raise their costs. So the goal is to pull this all together, generate a large volume of usage, and then be able to go to the cheapest market to acquire that.
Just to make sure people understand, though, and it's my understanding that here, at least initially, that most of the connections will be going to public buildings, public spaces,
well,
government.
That's the two halves of the project. There's roughly 150, let's say, anchor institutions that qualify as that. And they will all, at a minimum, have 100 megabits per second of connectivity to each other. Some of them will probably be connected at 1,000 megabits. But the 2,500, so way, way more connections that are fiber to the home, they will also have that exact same system.
Okay.
So if you're at home and you wanted to get something from the Urbana Library or the Champaign Library, you'll have an extremely fast connection to them. If you wanted to play a video game across town that worked through the internet with your friend that lived on the other side of town and they were both connected to the system, you would have an amazingly fast connection to that friend. If you wanted to watch a Netflix movie and download it through the internet, you'll be able to get that in perfect high-definition quality because it'll support that much bandwidth.
Okay. So initially, we're talking for the number of homes that would connect to this, we're talking about around 2,500,
yes.
And those people now, the connection will be provided to them. That is, the wire will come to their house. There will be no charge for the wire coming to their house, but they will have to pay
a monthly service to get the service. And that proposed fee is roughly $20 a month for a 5 megabit connection to the internet, which is enough to download and stream high definition movies, and then 100 megabits anywhere in the community. This concept of the community network, which doesn't cost us anything. I mean, we don't have any additional cost by letting you connect to Parkland or letting you connect to the Urbana Free Library at a high speed, because that all stays local on the network, and there's plenty of bandwidth to support that. So the idea of a community fiber co-op kind of fits into that. It's never going to be free to anybody, but it's going to be extremely low cost.
Well, and I mean, I think a good point is when you talk about free, there is the potential for locations to provide free access within their location, frankly, within their, within a small area around them, potentially, if that makes sense organizationally. A good example might be a park district that also wants to light up a park, so that when people come there, their laptops or or notebooks or whatever they've got with them would still function, or any number of their other facilities, that's bandwidth that's going to go through, hit the park district. But nonetheless, the users are going to have access to that for free.
Yeah, right. And already people can go down to the library and sure. get on for
Absolutely.
Free.
One of the examples from campus is the ICE Arena has wireless internet now that's available to the public. Right, and you might right. think, why do you need internet at the ICE Arena? Well, all the parents that take their kids there for skating lessons in the mornings and whatnot, their parents can now sit in the balcony, watch their kids skate, work on their whatever they need to do in terms of the internet, and it's a kind of a convenience thing for them. Those hours aren't necessarily lost.
Yeah. Let me – there's one other issue, and we try to more clarify this. The advantage – we talk about community networking. One of the things that will also drive our rate down is the more network traffic we keep locally, that's just traffic we don't pay for. It goes nowhere else. We don't pay a metered charge for it to go out, and we don't pay a metered charge to get it back into our community. It stays here. So we haven't got really good numbers yet on exactly how that impact's going to be, but it'll be dramatic.
I want to have you respond to one other issue, and I have callers I want to get to here. There, the cities apparently have retained a consultant, someone to try to help them think about did they want to participate or not. Mm-hmm. And I know that I believe that the cities are interested in hearing more from this individual. And what I have read about it is that he has said he has some concerns about the long-term economic sustainability of such a system. And as has said, he thinks that you're going too big, that it's overly ambitious, and that he's concerned about the ability of the system to generate adequate revenue over time to continue to pay for the maintenance and operation of the system. That this is my understanding of his concerns.
His sizing comment was based that he thought maybe the proposal we had sent to the government was too big to be funded. Well, we found that wasn't the case. I mean, obviously we got funded and it was right sized, or at least according to NTIA. The long-term economic viability is totally dependent on how many cash-paying customers we can sign up over time. In addition to the 2,500 homes that are in the 11 underserved census block groups, the rings that go out through the community have a series of manholes, and there's actually 495 of them that are planned throughout the community. There are 12,000 homes that are within 500 feet of one of those manholes. It's very easy to connect 500 feet of fiber to get from those other homes. There's another 800 businesses that are within 500 feet of any one of those 495 manholes. So as we go forward, once we get done with the federal grant, it's going to be relatively easy and relatively low cost to add a whole lot more customers to the system. Doug's model, the model that the city asked Doug to do, did not include adding any of those extra customers. They specifically asked for an analysis that said, what if we just built the grant area and stopped and didn't do anything more? Right. What would happen? Well, yeah, in about 7 years, there is a cash flow problem. Initially, there's not, but 7 years out, there is. I would certainly hope that we would find a way to provide services, at least to those 12,000 homes that are really close and easy to do, if not go much farther than that. But that's a discussion for 2011, 2012, when we get to the point of figuring out how we're going to expand things.
And the consultant actually did indicate that, go big or go home. There's definitely some economies of scale to continue to expand this out. And that has some, that has some real value to evaluate, look at those numbers, look at the cost of outreach. For us, the issue is, as he indicated, the small area that we looked at, because of its nature, the low penetration already in there, the cities have to either, it's kind of like a sport, a metaphor, but you either buy a team or build a team. Neither city currently, we have no utilities in-house, so we're not geared up to provide daily customer service. All the contacts are not in place. All the systems are in place. So we have to change our methodologies to clearly understand how to go out and get the sufficient count into those areas to make those areas successful.
So, and just real quick, if somebody was not living in one of these underserved areas, but they were very close to where the line is passing, mm-hmm. so that the idea of running a connection from their house to the line would be just would be a small distance, then though, would you be expecting that individual to pay the cost of having the connection?
The current model would have them pay for that. Long term, the cities, either one city or both cities, may elect to finance that in some other way. There's a lot of things that could happen 2 years out. The economy would probably have to take a turn for the better before the cities would consider doing such a thing. But certainly if there was a business, for instance, I'll pick on Busey Bank because I know some of those folks. Some of these lines run very close to where Busey has some facilities. Busey moves a lot of data back and forth between their various branches, and they have some high security needs. They have to be very careful with what they do with their financial and personal information. They may very well want to lease or buy some connectivity between their locations on this network. They would pay to extend fiber from the Busey facility to the closest manhole in order to make that happen. And my guess is they would find it, even whatever that cost to do that, it would still save them money over a 2 or 3 year period and then off into the future by doing that as opposed to paying for the circuits they're leasing now, which tend to be fairly expensive and fairly slow.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with some other folks here, and we will talk next with someone in, I believe, in Champaign in line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I tuned in late, so I apologize if I'm repeating. But first, I want to make a comment. Someone earlier expressed a concern about cooperation with the community, and I, too, have that concern. And I plan to let my representatives know how I feel about this and try to help them to understand or swing them to my point of view that now is the time, and it won't ever be cheaper, and we need to have this community fully served as soon as we can. The other thing, I just got in. I heard you talking about not putting anything on poles, and it would all be underground. And I live in an area of Champaign where everything is above ground. And my cable comes on a wire from a pole. Will that cause any problem for us? I mean, currently, you know, things are wireless within houses, but not when you get to the edge of your own house. You go to a wire strung across the yard. And I just was hoping you could comment on that a little bit. And I know this is not a comparison, but, you know, long ago, going small or barely big enough now has large parts of our city flooding and people saying maybe we'll have the money to do it in your lifetime, but, you know, don't hold your breath. So, you know, going small is not always a very good idea for a community and you want to establish service for anything. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the comment.
Well, thank you. The fact that you have above-ground utilities now won't really affect anything when we get to the point of bringing fiber into that area. You can mix and match above-ground and below-ground. Strategically, the reason for putting everything above ground are really two. We have a lot of ice storms in this area, and we have an awful lot of hungry squirrels. And in the spring, they come out and they just love to eat fiber cables. So putting them underground where the squirrels can't get at them is just a way of reducing expenses long term.
You know, and the issue about the communities where, you know, we don't see it a lot, but frankly, the U of I, City of Urbana, City of Champaign work together on projects all the time. There's road projects. There's agreements in place. METCAD, the police fire dispatch, has been in existence as a joint agreement for decades. So I'm confident that they'll work together, to look at the larger community goals, because that's the main benefit we get out of this is, what we call maintainable. And with that is the need for consistency. Hmm.
We have a couple of minutes left. You know, there's something that's a little bit different question, but I guess I'm really curious about what you would say about it. And I was thinking about it because of the earlier an earlier caller asked some questions about wireless. Mm-hmm. Because it seems that more and more people are using various kinds of wireless devices, to hook up to the internet. I think that there have been some places where they have thought, well, maybe the way to provide access to everybody is to literally turn our entire town into one big wireless hotspot so that no matter where you are, you can connect wireless. And I'm just curious about what you think about that sort of approach.
Well, interestingly enough, what we have found is a marriage, and that marriage is that they have found that they used to, lack of a better term, daisy chain these towers one to the other to the other. What they've really realized is that they need fiber to every one of these towers because they're pushing so much wireless traffic through each of the towers that they need the connectivity, and the way to do that is through the fiber. So, you know, there are some benefits to wireless. Obviously, there's some density issues that wireless can address, but nonetheless, the fiber backbone to even support the wireless has huge benefit.
Yeah, I see. So, would you see someday possibly being? I mean, once you got your backbone and you got your infrastructure in there, would you see that as being something that you might want to think about?
You could certainly do that. Wireless needs a lot of either lots of little transmitting points or maybe 30 or 40 big transmitting points. Mm-hmm. And neither community is overly fond of having extra towers be constructed. You know, if we're going to put a wireless tower in the middle of Cherry Hills, that's going to upset the residents of Cherry Hills, even though they might like the convenience of having wireless. So I see wireless as a distribution means within your home, within your business. If you're going down the street in your car and you want a signal, you're probably going to get that through the cellular system. And for a cell phone or maybe for a laptop, that's adequate bandwidth. But you can't get enough bandwidth for a wireless connection to drive your big flat-screen TV with a high-definition movie. That just isn't going to work. You can do it within your home if you've got fiber in the home to the first place, but as a general distribution means, that's not right. There's not enough bandwidth to make that happen.
And the kind of system we're talking about, it does, because I think also we know that in future more and more people will be getting more and more of their media either by streaming or by downloading. It's going to come that way, which it will mean that there will be tremendous pressure put on existing transmission systems because there are going to be so many people wanting to have so much stuff, and that's going to be place tremendous demand on bandwidth.
Yes.
Well, the other issue for wireless that has come up and will not change is we call public safety. And for, you know, police vehicles, fire vehicles to be able to pull down and access sufficient information, and because more and more of that has become geographical by nature, maps and things, video, direct video links, pieces of that, their need for more connectivity, they used to just through the little phone card, they started to override that. So obviously a larger wireless overlay within a community has some inherent vent from that perspective.
Well, we're going to have to stop there. Probably for people who have more interest in getting more information, the best thing to do would be for them to go to your website?
There's not tons of information there. We've done a few things there, but there will be another discussion session at the Urbana City Council this coming Monday and Champaign the following night, Tuesday. So the public forums for those things to be discussed at.
All right. Our guests this morning are Mike Smeltzer. He's Sites Director of Networking for U of I, Bill DeJarnett. He's Information Services Manager for the City of Urbana. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.